line. Is there any chance that Vermont, she's talking about this hybrid state federal health care exchange, does this have any appeal to you?
Well, it just doesn't make any sense. You know, I'm always interested in ideas, but let me tell you why I think it won't work. Right now, the U.S. Supreme Court is considering another challenge to the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, that I think probably has the most likelihood of succeeding of any of the cases that have been brought so far. And the antis have been bringing all kinds of cases. We know this. But this one says that the Affordable Care Act does not allow the federal government to provide subsidies through their exchange. The law was written so that states would build exchanges and allow federal subsidies to flow through them. Now, okay, we'll know that.
I mean, interrupt you, but she specifically said doing it this hybrid way and not the non-hybrid way and going full boat on the federal thing, that doing it this hybrid way, Vermonters would be eligible.
We don't believe that that's the case. Full stop. So there's the first problem. The second problem is that we are augmenting those federal subsidies to the many Vermonters who need more help, and Vermont and Massachusetts are the only two states in the country who do that. We have not yet figured out a way to take care of all those Vermonters, so you'd be hurting them. So two things: you may well lose all your federal subsidies depending on what the U.S. Supreme Court decides. You will lose your state subsidies, which Vermonters desperately need, so you're hurting Vermonters' access to health care. And the third point is we use this exchange to administer all of our Medicaid payments and our Medicaid interaction with the feds. So you've still got to run that part of the exchange. You can't just say, hey, the state of Vermont's not going to do Medicaid unless you wish to make that choice. That's a really bad one. So you need the exchange anyway, even if by some miracle you could meet all of these other requirements that I just mentioned magically. So my point is, this is an old argument. Back in the days when our exchange was limping along, we were all going, wow, building this exchange is really tough. It's been tough in Vermont. It's been tough for every governor in America. Some gave up, some stuck with it. This is not the time to return and retreat. It will hurt Vermonters. And the final one is, when you go to the federal exchange, you lose the very good insurance regulation that we have in Vermont that's superior to other states, that doesn't allow insurance companies to come in and say, you can do this, but you can't do that. That regulation really matters. We've built that over years, starting with Governor Snelling. So there are lots of reasons why this is a foolhardy idea.
And the exchange currently, you would describe, is working how well?
It is doing very well in terms of signing up new members and re-enrolling old members. Where we knew it wouldn't work and it's still not working is in the change of circumstance. The change of circumstance we put aside, frankly, because you can only focus on one big project at a time, and we expect to have change of circumstance functioning by the end of April. As soon as that's working, this whole backlog where folks are having trouble changing circumstance, whether they get divorced, change their employment, have a kid, whatever it is, will be fixed. And if we can accomplish that, which I believe we can, our exchange will be working very well for individuals.
As you frequently remind me, you talk to more Vermonters than probably anybody in the state of Vermont. What's the reaction you've gotten to your payroll tax idea?
People are trying to figure it out, and it's complicated. So, I think that, listen, this is where we all agree. I don't think there's a Vermonter out there who thinks that the healthcare system is going to thrive if we continue to have a payment system where the lowest income folks have trouble getting access to health care because the providers either have to go bankrupt if they serve too many of them, too many in their billing pile, or where the providers to stay in business say, I can only take a limited number of people that pay me 40 cents on a dollar. I got to stay in business, so I can't serve you now. So I don't think anyone thinks that's smart. I also don't think most Vermonters think it's fair, the current system, that when we shift the Medicaid cost to the people who pay for insurance, they never see a break in their rates, even though we're holding down health care costs, because they've got to pay for all the new Medicaid folks that are coming on and underpaying providers. So I don't hear anyone from any walk of life in Vermont saying, whether it's health care providers, individuals, business people, it's really fair, the system we have now. It's really working beautifully. Having said that, then the question is, well, if my plan works, which is to draw down $1.10 of federal money for every dollar of payroll tax, we believe that we can get every penny of that back to the payers who pay it directly through the Green Mountain Healthcare regulators, Al Gobain and the team, when we set rates for insurance companies. The folks who will be paying this tax will be the folks who don't currently provide health insurance to their employees. So we understand that there's a real impact. But to the folks who are paying, they're going to see a reduction because they will get the money back that they pay. It's a pretty elegant plan in this 0.7% payroll tax, and they'll stop getting, they will see their health insurance rates go up by 5% less than they would have, which is a lot of money for businesses. So it's fair, it's smart. I think what the business community and others want to know is, can you assure us that this 0.7% won't become 0.8% or 2% or whatever going forward, because it's raising a lot of money?
I mean, I think you're right. I think that's sort of the second half of your problem.
We've got to, we will design a wall around that money. We've got to work together with folks to come up with a way to give them that assurance. And this, and the first assurance they need is, show us that it really works. Show us that you can really, you're telling us that you can get this money back to us. Prove it. Those are both perfectly reasonable requests. And I think the third piece the business community and others will be asking is there some other way besides your idea to raise this money? I'm all ears to all of those questions.
244-1777, that's our local number in Central Vermont. Toll free, you can reach us at 877-291-8255. Let's take a call from Barry. Pete, how are you this morning?
Good morning, Mark, and good morning, Governor.
Hey, Pete.
My question is, it has taken me a week to ask a follow-on question regarding my call-in last week of asking the governor why hospitals couldn't list, give a list of what their charges for certain medical procedures. In the governor's response, he said, and rightly so, that that hospital expenses were not a typical consumer-oriented product, which I agree with. However, a person I know not so long ago had a procedure that was not covered by insurance. And prior to the procedure being done, the hospital gave that individual what the cost of it would be in its entirety. And to prove the point, the person went in, there was a little complication, had to come back. And the question was asked at the time, would this cost add on to the cost given prior? And the answer was no. We've given you a cost, and that is what it will be. So, once again, I'm asking the governor, why can't hospitals give... or the state require hospitals to list what their charges are for procedures without, you know, without complications. I understand that when you get into an operating room, there could be.
Okay, I think we, Pete. Thank I think you. We got the question. Thank you.
Bye.
So the difficulty in listing a price like you would on a car or a new oven that you're going to go buy is that the system for paying our providers and hospitals is so convoluted that it's very difficult for them to give a straight answer to that. Let me explain why. It goes back to what Mark and I were just talking about. If you're a Medicaid payer and you show up at the hospital for a hip, you're going to be charged a different rate than if you're a private insurance person showing up for a hip. That's just the truth. That's because the hospital's got to stay in business. So
so they can't list like a rack rate?
You could list a rack rate, but it would be the highest possible rate. That's the rate they're going to give you. Okay. In other words...
But then couldn't we sort of figure out, well, a Medicaid patient would pay 60% of that? I mean, at least have a number to work with.
But the hospital's got to stay in business, so they've got to know if you're going to do 10 hips, how many are going to be Medicaid, where I get 40 cents on a dollar, and how many are going to be private insurance, where I actually charge $1.20 mm-hmm. for a dollar, because I got to balance the books. So my point is, mm-hmm. we act as if healthcare... If anyone who believes that the healthcare system works like a business, where the free market works in healthcare, is dead wrong. It doesn't work. It's broken. And that's why we've got to get away from this entire fee-for-service system where we say, we're going to charge you for a hip, and instead move to a system where we say, collectively, we got to keep everybody healthy. We got to keep folks in hips. We've got to keep folks away from getting really, really sick. Let's move from a fee-for-service quantity-driven system to one where we reimburse for quality. And that's exactly what Vermont's trying to do right now, so that we don't do this crazy system where frankly, one person through the door will pay, you know, $700 for a hip. Another one pays $1,100 for the same hip. Now, you can say, go ahead and list a price. You can do that. But in the real world, the provider doesn't get paid that way. They don't have people come in and write a check like you do for a car or an oven. Depending upon who your insurer is and your copay, you're all paying different amounts. So that's why it's so complex to come up with just a price list that would actually keep the hospital in business.
244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. Can you tell me right now that all of the money that would be raised from this payroll tax, all of it will be used for the Medicaid shift?
It will all be used for Medicaid-related costs, and as well as the cost to regulate Medicaidings. In other words, there's some money in there to help the Green Mountain Care Board do their job and so forth, but it's all related to the Medicaid cost shift.
Okay. So when you say it's related.
I'm just saying that in order to have the board make this work, we have to pay for that. In other words, to get the money back, there's administrative costs to do that. So all I'm saying is we took all the Medicaid-related cost shift costs and put them into this number.
Okay. Because when I was talking last hour with Patty Comline, she was suggesting that not all of this money was going to go into the Medicaid shift.
That's incorrect. We definitely are targeting this money for the Medicaid shift. Now, we can have an argument about what that means. For example, right now, we've just cut our uninsured rate in half in Vermont. Big deal. From $43,000 down to $20,000 approximately. When we did that, by moving more people into Medicaid through the Affordable Care Act. We're counting the cost of that cost shift in this number.
Okay. Let's go to Burlington. Dave, good morning. How's it going?
Good morning, Governor. I'd like to follow up with the last gentleman said. I understand it's complicated, but if you look at the price of a hotel room, you'll pay X number of dollars, but if you're a AAA member, maybe you'll pay a little less. And I've done some research, and MRIs using the same equipment and for the exact same procedure code can vary 300%. And I really think that if hospitals were forced to list their most common procedures that people use, I think that there would be some competition, and they would be cognizant of what others were charged. And it may not be 100% for everything, but I really think the first step in attacking this problem is greater transparency. And I'll listen to your response offline.
I agree with you, and I don't object to hospitals or docs listing their charges. I think it's a good idea. We've often focused on that here in Montpelier. Other states have as well. What we have to remember in Vermont is that we don't have the competition in our healthcare system that you have in bigger cities where you can choose from 6 or 7 or 8 or 10 different hospitals without driving huge distances. So the competition question, the notion that competition would solve our problems in terms of cost, doesn't bear out in a small rural state. I don't object to folks trying to list costs. It's just hard to do because we don't actually go in and pay, even in a hotel room. Your hotel room example, sure, a certain number of people will get a small discount for being a member of a different organization or another, but it's a teeny discount compared to what happens in healthcare, where you literally have swings that are 100, you know, that are from 40 cents to $1.20 on a dollar's billing. So it's tough to do.
The supporters of a tax on sugar-sweetened beverages would like to see you use some of that money raised towards this Medicaid cost shift. I thought that was a pretty clever pivot they made here after you made your announcement, because it wasn't what they were talking about a few months back. Does that make that soda idea any more appealing to you?
No, it doesn't. I'm open to any ideas, but here's the problem with that particular tax. I don't believe that it raises the revenue that folks claim it raises. 2 cents an ounce sounds like a teeny little bit of money. It literally takes a can of soda up 25 to 30 cents a can. It applied. Then
I wouldn't mind having 2 cents an ounce for. It sounds like a lot of money to me.
Two cents an ounce.
Yeah.
Right. Well, it does. But if you do the math, a lot of folks think it's only two. People keep saying to me, "It's only 2 cents." I'm like, "Well, yeah, it's 2 cents on an ounce of sugar, which means about 25 to 30 cents for a single can of soda.
Okay, I thought you were saying it was a small amount. It seems to
no,
me
it's a
large
amount.
Okay,
right. No,
okay.
The 2 cents, people go, it's only 2 cents.
Okay.
Come on, they think
right.
it's 2 cents on the can. They don't realize it's 2 cents on the sugar.
Right, on an
so
ounce.
So my point is, it works out to 25, 30 cents a can. Most folks don't understand that. They think we're talking about a teeny little tax that magically raises all this money. But let's just pretend that somehow magically, you know, there's no competition and the tax doesn't matter, which isn't true. The second problem is, what do you apply it to? Now, they're proposing that you apply it to any sugar in a soda. My point is, listen, I'll tell you, my experience is that diet soda makes you feel a lot junkier than sugar soda. So are we going to apply it to that? They say no.
Because of aspartame?
Why is
diet soda make you feel crummy?
I used to drink it. I'm just telling you, in my own experience, when I used to drink 4 or 5 diet Pepsis a day, after about a year of that, I didn't feel so good, and I didn't look so good either. My point is,
do you really make a direct connection between that product and your health?
I felt a lot better when I got off it.
Really?
My point is this. Listen, everyone's different, but there are those of us who believe that diet soda is no more healthy for you than sugar soda. And so the question becomes, when you start a debate like this, where do you stop and where do you start? So the notion of this is simple and cheap just isn't true. The other big problem is, the whole point of this is to try and get people not to buy the product, like cigarettes. So it's a dwindling revenue source. If the theory really works, it's a dwindling revenue source. I don't think we want our Medicaid budgets supported by a dwindling revenue source. The whole point is, that's how we got into this mess. Not enough money to pay for low-income Vermonters' health care. So why would you use a tax that you are designing to go down to pay for a cost that you know is going to go up?
Why have you had no problem then raising the cigarette taxes over the years?
Well, you might have noticed I've never been a big fan of that.
Okay.
And, this governor has fought very hard to resist big changes in the cigarette tax. Again, a lot of farmers won't agree with me on this, but when this legislature wanted to do a dollar, I said no.
Yeah.
Because what happens is, low-income people pay it. It's regressive. You can get cigarettes somewhere else very easily, buy cartons of them in New Hampshire or neighboring states and bring them in. And it's a dwindling revenue source. It's not going to work.
You're going to cave on your opposition to the soda tax the way you did on cell phones eventually?
You know, as you know, you got to take every issue as governor, issue by issue. But the cell phones, I was actually convinced that it might actually save lives. In this case, I just don't see how this one will work.
Let's take a couple more calls, let you go. We go to East Montpelier. Bob, good morning.
Well, you already answered my question on the soda tax.
All right.
I wasn't sure if you were for it or against it, but I guess I got my answer just by listening to you.
Yeah. Well, how do you feel about it?
I don't like it.
Yeah.
I'm with you. I drink soda personally, and I'm 55 years old, and I don't drink a lot of soda.
Yeah.
And I'm fairly healthy. I mean, you know. It's just another tax. We don't need any more taxes.
Well, the other point is,
I'm one of these persons who's frustrated with this government of this state with taxes.
So, Bob, are you liking the
income tax thing for the health care? I mean, my wife, I'm insured through my wife's job, and I don't think, you know, I don't see anything wrong with the health insurance system the way it is.
But where's your wife work?
I mean, why should I pay for somebody else's insurance? That's the way I'm looking at it.
But just so you know, your wife's employer is paying for someone else's insurance through the cost shift in Medicaid. I mean, that's what we're trying to fix here.
Okay.
Thanks. Well, thanks. And I agree with you on the soda tax.
So we're going to talk with Senator Zuckerman here in a moment. He's going to have a bill to propose legalization of marijuana. A big study came out last week. Some money there to be had.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people have asked me, how come you didn't solve your 16 budget problems with revenue from legalization of marijuana? As you know, my bias is towards legalization. My only question is, when is the right time? So I appreciate Senator Zuckerman and other folks' work on this, because we got to figure it out. Having said that, there's no way that you could move fast enough to solve our fiscal problems in 16 with marijuana. You just couldn't get it up running and working in tax fast enough, even if we had it all figured out, and we don't. So I just want to say that my interest in this is not revenue. It's in taking a product that currently is prohibited, which is widely available, and finding smarter ways to regulate it. And you know, even the opponents say, you know, pot's easier to get for kids than alcohol. And that proves my point. Yes, when you regulate a product that you don't want people to use a lot of, you have a much better chance of doing it smartly if it's legal and regulated and distributed by, frankly, in Vermont's case, liquor through the government, than if you just have the wild, wild west where illegal dealers will sell it to anyone anytime and they don't care who, what you are, how old you are, or how much, or what's in it.
Why wouldn't that same argument apply to heroin?
Well, the problem with heroin is that, you know, in the debate over marijuana and alcohol, we are debating, is one worse for you or better for you? And there's an open debate on that, but most people agree that one isn't worse than the other. In the case of heroin, you're signing up for a lifetime of miserable addiction. There's just no question you become addicted. In the case of alcohol, there are many, many people who drink some alcohol in moderation, and you know, they don't become addicted. That's frankly true with the majority of people that drink it. You could argue that that's true with marijuana, too. You can't argue that with heroin. If you take heroin, you're in.
But what about your argument that you can control things more if you kind of bring them in and regulate them? Well, why could you make that same case with heroin?
Heroin is a highly addictive substance. There's no question that you become addicted if you use it.
So is alcohol.
Yes, but the majority of people that drink alcohol don't become addicted to alcohol. And the majority of people that smoke pot don't become addicted to pot. The difference is that if you start shooting heroin, you're in. You're addicted immediately. And it's a totally different kind of debate.
Okay, but people are going to, I mean, are you arguing that fewer people will try heroin if it's the way it is right now?
No, I'm arguing that in the case of marijuana and alcohol, if you use them in moderation, many people in Vermont have proven that you don't become addicted. Because let's be honest about this. We act as if legalization means people will smoke pot. People, the statistics all suggest that Vermont has among the highest pot smokers in the country. I bet you find that most of those Vermonters, like those who have a beer with dinner or a glass of wine with dinner, are not addicted to it. In the case of heroin, if you take that, you're in. You're addicted. That's what the substance does to you. So what we're trying to do with heroin is say, let's find ways to, with folks who are addicted but not dangerous to others, which is the vast majority of heroin addicts, let's get them into treatment. Let's try to get them off this substance because we know it's addictive and totally destroys your life, and onto a more productive life. With alcohol, we say, listen, this isn't a good thing to drink too much of. Just as, you know, and obviously we sell it through the government, regulate it through the government, and we try to keep it out of the hands of kids and all the rest. And, you know, we have some successes and some failures. But the point is, illegal dealers don't care who they sell it to.
Let's take one more call here. Justin, good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good.
I wanted to just discuss the soda tax a little bit. I think it's more of a lifestyle issue than a health issue. Don't get me wrong, I don't drink soda because you're only supposed to have 4.5 grams of sugar a day, and an average soft drink has 40 grams of sugar in it. But taxing it, I don't believe, is going to discourage people from drinking it. And then you're also taxing it, hoping you're counting on the revenue from the tax, yet if everybody quits drinking, you're not going to have any revenue, so it's kind of
right.
Counterintuitive.
It's a dwindling revenue by design, yeah.
Right. And then I think if you really want to discourage people from and make people healthier, you got to do education through in high school, whether it be health class or nutrition
right.
classes, to discourage people from starting to drink soda. But taxing it, I don't, just like with people that smoke cigarettes, I don't think the tax on cigarettes has made a big difference or curve in the amount of people that smoke.
Wow.
I think if they're
okay.
going to smoke, they're going to smoke. And if they're going to drink soda, whether it's $1.45 for a 12-ounce Coke or $1.55, it ain't going to make any difference to them.
Right.
All right. I mean, I'd agree with that. Maybe once you start smoking cigarettes, you probably don't care what the price is because you're an addict. And thank you for your call. But wouldn't you agree that fewer young people have started because of the high taxes? Or no, you don't buy that?
I think that education has been a big piece in getting young people not to smoke. I'm not so sure that price has been a big driver.
$7 or $8 a pack of cigarettes now, you don't think is a prohibit it makes it prohibitive for some kids out there?
It makes it tough, no question. But my point is, I think you get, I think as the caller just suggested, you get more, you travel more distance on these issues of what we should and shouldn't do with our health, with education, with a system that's designed to help us all do the right thing. Frankly, moving from fee-for-service in the healthcare system to one where everybody's in trying to keep you healthy, off the smokes, out there exercising, eating the right foods. But education is the biggest driver. And I've seen it in my own family members. You know, my former father-in-law had a heart attack, quadruple bypass. He ate, and his lifestyle choices were many of the wrong ones to stay healthy. And it wasn't until he got really sick that the folks sat down with him, a nutritionist and all that, and said, you know, this is what you're doing, this is what you should be doing. And that was 15 years ago. He's going strong now because he changed a lot of his habits. My point is...
So you drink diet soda, too?
I think he got off the soda.
I think you lost your endorsement for that.
I know I did. But listen, here's the point. Going back to the caller's point, the one that hasn't been mentioned is portability. I'm from Windham County. If you can go up and pick a case of soda up across the river, across the bridge, for $4 or $5 less than you're going to pay in Vermont, you're going to do that. It's not a perishable item. You go buy a case, you throw it in the basement, you throw it in the fridge when you need it, and when you run out, you run back over to New Hampshire and get more of it.
Mm-hmm.
Frankly, with no bottle deposit over there, and a lot of people are doing that anyway, so let's not help feed the beast here.
Thank you for your time.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Governor Shumlin joining us here live at the State House. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back in just a few moments.
Looking for a great price on a new truck? Then come into Cody Chevrolet Cadillac. Now through February 2nd, get up to $9,000 in total value savings on a 2014 Chevy Silverado pickup. Or lease a 2015 Double Cab All-Star Edition for as low as $239 per month for 24 months with $2,900 due at signing. See us for details. Stop by now for the best selection and the best deals at Cody Chevrolet Cadillac on the Barry Montpelier Road or CodyChevrolet.com. Chevrolet, find new roads.
Tired of grocery shopping at huge supermarkets with no personality? This is Tom Mihuron, and I invite you to shop our well-stocked, right-sized family market in Waitsfield. Custom-cut meats, fresh seafood and produce, gourmet cheeses, regular and organic groceries, and over 1,000 wines. Come and see Jeff and Bill in the meat department, Tana in produce, Gary in seafood, Nate in the deli, or Nancy and Liz in our incredible wine department. Family run for over 70 years. Mihuron Supermarket, Village Square Shopping Center in Waitsfield.
I'm Pete Watson, a Vermont businessman. I believe an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. It gives Vermonters the opportunity to support each other, and that's what a solid economy is all about. I'm concerned about health care costs like the $202 million Vermont spends treating obesity-related diseases. A tax on high-calorie sugary drinks could decrease obesity while providing funding for health care for underserved Vermonters. Prevention for a healthy Vermonters and a healthier bottom line. Learn more at healthiervt.org.
Folks, Dan Keene here, owner of Lamoille Valley Ford. If you want to save big on your next truck, then listen to this. The all-new 2015 Ford F-150s are slowly starting to arrive, but your real opportunity to save big money is on the last of the 2014s. At Lamoille Valley Ford, we intentionally stocked up huge on the 2014s, and with over 115, we have the largest selection in Vermont, but when these trucks are gone, they're gone. Right now through January 31st, you can buy or lease any new 2014 F-150 regular cab, super cab, or crew cab in stock at Lamoille Valley Ford, and we'll take $3,000 off. Combine that with already huge Ford rebates and discounts, and that's up to $10,250 off a brand new F-150 at Lamoille Valley Ford before you deduct your trade. Folks, I'll guarantee you two things. This is a great deal for you, and these trucks will not last. So drive Route 14, 15, or 16 to Hardwick and the Great American F-150.